COVID vax were so grotesque and so overwhelming that it's almost hard to watch them just 2 years later. But we should, because the people who told them are still effectively in charge. Here's one. It's from 2021. This is CDC Director Rochelle Walensky telling us, informing us, that anyone who takes the vax and then somehow manages to get infected, but that would never happen, but if it did happen, that person would not be able to spread the virus to anyone else. We promise. Watch.
Can you, if you were to get infection with and vaccinated, could you give it to somebody else? Were you silently able to spread it? Those data were not covered in the clinical trials, but now data have emerged again that have demonstrated that even if you were to get infected during post-vaccination, that you can't give it to anyone else.
Why hasn't she been charged with a crime? Well, she never will be. And of course, just a few years later, it turns out the whole thing was a disaster of world historic proportions. Books will be written about this at some point when we can tell the truth about it. A lot of people were killed or permanently disabled by it. How many is the question? How many people were hurt by the vax? How many people were killed by the vax that was mandatory? Well, we just spoke to Brett Weinstein on this show, Professor Brett Weinstein. He told us he's seen research that up to 17 million people across the globe may have died from it. Watch.
I was recently at a conference in Romania on the COVID crisis, and so there was a lot of work trying to unpack what we actually understand, and I saw a credible estimate of something like 17 million deaths globally from this technology. So
17 million deaths from the COVID vax?
Well, when you scale up to billions, it's not hard to reach a number like that with a technology this dangerous. Now, to your deeper question, I think let's steel man.
Just for perspective, I mean, that's like the death toll of a global war.
Yes, absolutely. This is a great tragedy of history. So that proportion.
17 million globally. Now, that's an estimate. And the interesting and most shocking fact, actually, is that we don't really know because no one seems to be keeping track, at least in this country, which is amazing considering what our government keeps track of. The Biden administration knows exactly how many transgender heart surgeons there are, how many bisexual Samoan airline pilots. They keep track of it with Nazi-like precision. But how many people were killed or disabled by the COVID vax? They don't care, so they're not keeping track of those numbers. So it falls to people who don't work for the U.S. government. One of them is a man called Steve Kirsch, who is a MIT-trained inventor, by the way, a longtime donor to the Democratic Party, not a lifelong right-wing extremist or anything, a businessman. But he has now dedicated his time and his ample energy to figuring out exactly what the COVID vax did to this country and the world. He's the founder of the COVID-19 Early Treatment Fund. Steve Kirsch joins us now. Steve, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you, Tucker. It's great to be here.
So before you tell us what you found, and you've been working on this, it seems to me, day and night for a couple of years, tell us your background, because you don't have a background in public health. It's sort of a weird life trajectory that you've had, which I think makes the story more compelling. How did you get to where you are now, to doing this?
Well, as a young kid, I had a summer school probability course when I was in high school, and that was just really game-changing for me. I was fascinated by math and just really excelled in math. And I went to MIT, got a couple of degrees from MIT, left MIT, started about seven different high-tech companies, a couple of them had billion-dollar market caps. And then what happened is COVID essentially closed my business and that we couldn't go into work. And so I was looking to do whatever I could to make a difference so that I could go back to work and everybody else could as well. And so I started looking at early treatments and started the COVID-19 Early Treatment Fund, raised about $5 million. And we funded research on drugs like fluvoxamine, which was featured on 60 Minutes. And then there was, of course, this work on the vaccine in the background, and we were all very hopeful that the vaccine would be successful.
Yes.
And so it came out, and the FDA said that they have tested it, and it's totally safe, and everybody should get it. It uses this new novel technology. And, of course, I'm a technologist, so I'm always looking for something that's new, better technology. And so they said, super safe, everybody should get it. And I said, look, even though that I knew about early treatments and I knew that fluvoxamine was effective in reducing long-haul COVID, and if you got it early, people didn't seem to suffer from COVID. Even though I had that, I said, oh, why don't I get an extra protection? So I myself was vaccinated in March of 2021, and I got two shots of Moderna. And then about a month later, I started hearing horror stories from my friends. I heard from one person who had three relatives who were perfectly healthy, and all three of them died a week after they got the vaccine. And I said to her, well, I said, that's impossible. That's statistically, like, so unlikely that it could never happen if it was caused by the vaccine. And she said, yeah, but they're dead. And then a week later, the our carpet cleaner comes at our door, and he's wearing a mask. And I give him a hard time. I say, hey, don't you know if you take the vaccine, you don't have to wear a mask? And he said, well, I wasn't able to take both shots. And I said, why not? He said, well, after the first shot, 2 minutes after the first shot, he had a heart attack. And he spent the night in the hospital, and he has never been the same since that time. And so that was the wake-up call for me when I saw it happening in my own personal circle, because I was believing the whole narrative. I was selling the whole narrative until this guy shows up at my door to clean my carpet saying he had a heart attack 2 minutes after he got the shot, and he's never been the same, and his wife had symptoms too. So that's what led me to start to look and see, somebody's lying to me, and I don't think it's my friends. And so I started looking at the various data. I looked at all sorts of data. I looked at every piece of data I could lay my hands on, and it was all the same. It was all showing that these shots are causing a level of adverse events as well as death, morbidity and mortality, beyond anything that's ever been seen before.
Wait, and can I ask you to pause right there? So, you're describing pure intellectual inquiry motivated by, you know, curiosity and concern, which is great. But you're also doing this in a context, and the context is the spring of 2021, where you are not allowed to question the vaccine if you want to remain friends with people, if you want to be considered a serious person, if you don't want to be trashed on Wikipedia as you have been. And so you spend your whole life gathering accolades, going to, you know, impressive schools, making a ton of money, being celebrated in the press. And you must know on some level, because you're smart, that if you start talking about this stuff, all of that is over and you're going to be a thought criminal and people are going to look at you sideways. Did you know that?
No, I had no idea. I thought that if I told the truth and I let people know about the facts and the data that I had uncovered, that people would basically say, oh, you're right. This looks like a big problem. We need to stop the shots. And I told my wife after, you know, before I did this, I said, hey, this will be over in like 2 weeks. I mean, the data is so clear that this is going to be done in 2 weeks. And we're still at it after all this time.
So tell us what you found and what you have found and what your conclusions are.
Well, what I found was all the data was consistent with this vaccine being the most dangerous vaccine of all time. I mean, there are more reports on this vaccine in the VAERS system, which is the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. It's the official system for reporting adverse events for a vaccine. It's set up by the U.S. government. It's run by the U.S. government. And there were more reports for the COVID vaccine than for all vaccines in history combined. And not only that, but we found out later that this VAERS system, which they set up to monitor for safety, had triggered 770 different safety signals. Now, normally, a vaccine only will trigger zero safety signals. It'd be a really unusual for a vaccine to trigger any safety signals in VAERS, especially because the way they define these safety signals makes it almost impossible for a vaccine to trigger a safety signal. But this vaccine triggered 770 safety signals. So what did the CDC do about it? They basically told no one. The only reason that we even found out about it is because someone issued a Freedom of Information Act request to the CDC requesting, could you show me the output of the analysis of the safety signal analysis you're supposed to do? And so they got back a spreadsheet showing 770 safety signals were triggered. That is mind-blowing. That is not a 3-alarm fire. That is a 770-alarm fire. These are things like myocarditis. These are things like pulmonary embolism. These are basically 770 unique symptom types that are triggered in the VAERS system saying, we have a problem here. You need to investigate. This should have been a complete stopping condition for the CDC. The CDC should be warning people, hey, we got 770 safety signals. Never seen anything like that before in history. Maybe we might have made a mistake on this vaccine. But they said nothing. They didn't even let people know that there had been any safety signals that were triggered. And so there's no question that the CDC is a very corrupt organization and that these people who are in charge here are burying all the safety signals. They will not engage with you. They talk about saying, hey, we want to stop misinformation. But, you know, the way you stop misinformation, you know, by the way, I agree with them. You know, misinformation is a problem and misinformation kills. The only thing that we disagree on is who is telling that information. Now, I think it's them and they think it's me. But unless the two of us get together in a dialogue, we're not going to be able to figure that out. And they seem to not want to engage in dialogue with anybody that they call a misinformation spreader. So we never have resolution of this. And in fact, it's so easy for them to stop the misinformation instantly. All they have to do is invite us to a room, I don't care whether it's at the CDC or HHS, in a room where we go and we say, hey, let's query the VSD database, which is the Vaccine Safety Data Link database. Let's query the Medicare database and let's query the Medicaid database. Let's query those databases and see what results we get. Let's give us free access to query the data. We don't have to do the querying ourselves. You can do the querying. You just tell us the results. We're not looking for any personally identifiable information, just statistics. Let's go give us free access to the data so we can surface the truth. And if we're wrong, we'll back off. Nothing. Can't get that. Can't get a dialogue with them. They won't give us access to the data, but the data that we do have access to that we've been able to get, it all shows that these vaccines are killing people, and they're killing the very people that they were meant to protect. It's actually increasing your risk of death.
On what grounds could they refuse to allow an American citizen access to data that he pays for in the country that he owns?
Apparently, they're not required by law to respond. They're required to respond to the Freedom of Information Act requests. Now, those Freedom of Information Act requests provide a very narrow level of data transparency. We can only get reports that they've produced. We can't, under the FOIA laws, you're not allowed to request stuff that they don't already have. So they can run a simple record count and say how many records or, you know, how many people died or what have you. But you can't get them to create novel records under the Freedom of Information Act
yes.
request. So you can't get them to run a query for you, especially one that involves, querying two different databases, because that would require work, and work is not covered under FOIA. So they have the option to opt out. And whenever you try to request anything like that, they always opt out or they don't respond. I mean, like Aaron Seary's been trying to get lots of data from them for a very long time and has spent several years in litigation successfully and, you know, finally gets data. But you know, this should not be like pulling teeth. This should be like, guys, they should be welcoming us. They should be saying, come on in. We want the truth to be exposed. This shouldn't be an adversarial kind of relationship. This should be a very cooperative relationship. We're just scientists. We're just trying to find out what the data says. And, you know, people like Brian Hooker, they were granted access to these databases, to the VSD databases. And when Brian Hooker started finding a connection between autism and vaccines, his access to the VSD database was revoked instantly. And so this is the way it works. Once you're onto something, they revoke access. Now, when there's no data transparency, you have to be very, very suspicious of your government. So look, you know, I have an open invitation to the heads of the CDC and the FDA. If you want, you said that misinformation is a problem, you want to stop it. All you have to do is invite us in, let us do the queries on your database, and we'll see what the data says.
Yeah.
And we'll make all of that information public. It's all about transparency of public health information. It shouldn't be kept private.
Of course. Let us see the numbers that we paid for and own as American citizens. You disgusting, dishonest bureaucrats. I agree. But you don't have the chance to do that. So what data sets are you looking at, and what do they tell you?
Well, so I have some data that we were able to get from the Medicare database. And it shows very conclusively that if you give the pneumococcal vaccine, for example, in March of 2021, it's a flat line. In fact, it slopes downward. If you give the COVID vaccine to the same group of people effectively, it slopes upwards. And what is it
that's sloping upwards?
The deaths. The death rate.
Oh, you kill people. Okay.
Yeah. Like, you know, did it impact your mortality? And so with the COVID vaccine, your mortality increases every day since you got the shot for a while. And so we've seen that in the U.S. data, in the U.S. Medicare data. That's gold standard data. That's hard to dispute. And you can't say it's just the timing, because we can compare vaccine A with vaccine B. And vaccine A goes like this, and vaccine B, the safer vaccine, is a flat line. In fact, it slopes downwards. The other one slopes upwards. And so it's obvious to anybody looking at that data that the vaccine is increasing mortality. And then we got this, I was contacted, I got the data dump from New Zealand. There was a guy, Barry Young, who is a database administrator for the New Zealand Ministry of Health, essentially Health New Zealand. And he was very concerned about what he was seeing in the database, because people were getting the shots and dying. And so he released the database, the complete database of the database that he controlled, and he released it, and I got a copy of the original database. I then obfuscated it to make sure that there was no personally identifiable information that was disclosed. And I released the record level data, the patient record level data, that has never been disclosed for any vaccine in history by any government in the entire world. So this is an event. This is an unprecedented event. Never before in world history has anyone ever released this patient level, record level data showing when a person was vaccinated and showing when they died. And it's on a per person basis. We don't need to disclose any names. We don't even need to disclose ages. We just talk about age ranges. And you do this analysis on this data. It's called a time series cohort analysis. It's the same analysis that the UK does, the UK Office of National Statistics does when they try to analyze the vaccine in their country and show the vaccine is safe. They do what's called a time series cohort analysis. Now, I did exactly the same analysis technique on that data. And what it shows is very clear. It shows that if whatever is happening in the background, if the background is going upwards because you got it like dose three is given at a time when deaths are low and they're going high. And it, and so you naturally expect to slope up. And we saw a slope up, but the slope up went up like this instead of this. And for dose number four, where the deaths are now falling because it's 6 months later and it's the completely opposite seasonality, deaths are now falling. But if you look at the time series cohort analysis, deaths are rising. So in all cases, the deaths are exceeding what you would expect from background. There's no doubt about it. I've talked to epidemiologists. It's like, look, it's very, very clear. It's crystal clear. We have record level data. It's the best data possible. And it shows without any doubt whatsoever that the vaccines are killing the very people that they were meant to protect. So it's confirmation of what we saw in the Medicare data. Now, I can't have a discussion with any epidemiologist in the world other than people who agree with me, like Harvey Risch is one of the top epidemiologists in the world, and he will say, yeah, there's no way you can explain that. And no epidemiologist in the world will come and chat with me about it and tell me how I got it wrong, because this method is very definitive. There's only one way to do the time series cohort analysis, and what it shows is very clear, and anybody who claims that it doesn't show anything doesn't really understand how to analyze data properly. And so, look, I have an open invitation to any epidemiologist. You know, let's have a discussion. But nobody wants to talk about it. In fact, the epidemiologists that agree with me tell me, hey, I can't chat with you and give my support because I will be fired from my job if I do that. And so I can't afford to speak to you because I need to provide for my family. If I come and support you, I'll be fired. And like, there's one epidemiologist in an area of the world where, you know, he can't get another job. So he's like, you know, totally support what you're doing. You're absolutely right. But I'm not really allowed to say a word because as an epidemiologist, I will be fired. It's the same thing happening for doctors. Doctors are not allowed to speak out. If doctors speak out, they're going to lose their license to practice medicine. They could lose their job. Their family won't talk. Family members won't talk to them anymore. You know, the whole thing. I mean, this is just terrible that we have people dying and we can't talk about it.
What do you think, based on the numbers that you've seen and analyzed, the death toll is from the COVID vaccine?
Worldwide or
worldwide and the U.S. if you have those?
Yeah, I mean, worldwide, it's over 13 million people easily. You know, Denny Rancourt came up with 17 million people. And I don't disagree with that at all. I think that's a fair estimate. And that doesn't surprise me at all. I know it's at least 13 million. So 17 million isn't a far stretch from that. And by the way, you did an excellent interview with Brett Weinstein. I thought it was one of Brett's finest interviews ever. And you did just a spectacular job. I agree with everything that Brett said. I mean, I listened to that interview very carefully. Everything that Brett said was spot on.
I mean, it does raise a number of questions, some of them even philosophical questions. Like, how can world governments kill more than 10 million people and leave some large undetermined number disabled for life and not say a word about it, not apologize, not work to fix it, not work to make the families whole? I mean, just leave it by the side of the road like a corpse and keep marching. I don't understand that. How can that happen?
Believe me, I'm surprised as well. You know, I can't get an audience with anybody in the United States Congress except for Senator Ron Johnson. Like, I can't have a dialogue. They won't talk to me. Nobody wants to know. They don't want to know the truth. It's like autism in this country. You know, autism's been around for a very long time. And we've known from the statistics that vaccines cause autism. It's a leading cause of autism. Now, can we even get a discussion about that?
May I ask you to pause? The statement you just made is verboten. I mean, no person who wanted to, say, work at the Atlantic Magazine or who takes the New York Times on a daily basis would ever say something like that, because you're not allowed to say that. Or, why do you – tell us why you say that.
I say it's because it's true. Yeah, I've collected my own data just independently to look at the connection between vaccines and autism. And it's amazing. I had over 10,000 parents tell me about their kids. And I said, hey, tell me about your kids. Tell me how many vaccines they've gotten. Tell me if they have autism. Tell me if they have ADHD. Tell me, you know, just tell me about your kids. Tell me about the medical conditions and tell me about how many shots they get. And it's a straight line. The more shots you get, the more likely you are to get autism. And it's the same thing for ADHD. It's the same thing for panda pans. It's the same thing for autoimmune diseases. I mean, it is basically the more shots you get, the less healthy the kids are. And this is very clear from the statistics. And then people say, oh, Steve, you know, your misinformation super spreader and your followers don't believe in vaccines. But there's no way that parents could have coordinated their answers to this question to create a straight line for all of these conditions, that the more vaccines you get, the greater your chance. I don't care, you know, who my followers are. There's no way that you can game a statistical result like that. So I know just from my personal surveys that there's no way you could game something like this, that there is a connection. But, you know, we have lots of data that's that is known by other researchers. There are lots of these papers, the publishing that are published showing the link between vaccines and autism. I know one doctor who had like 150 autism cases, and he said 44 of them happened relatively overnight, meaning that they happened within either the child was normal one day and then severely autistic the next day, or it happened over a 1 or 2 week period. He said he had 44 cases where he had rapid onset autism. And in every single one of the 44 cases, it happened within 2 weeks after a vaccine. Now, so, that is statistically impossible if vaccines aren't causing autism.
So one thing that's always, and I'm willing to believe every single thing you say, and watching the response to Bobby Kennedy's famous Rolling Stone article almost 20 years ago convinced me they were hiding something, because the hysteria was just overwhelming. But what's so interesting is there are a couple of big autism advocacy groups. Well, there's one big one. And they, quote, don't take a position on this. And how could a group that supposedly advocates on behalf of children with autism and funds research to prevent autism or to alleviate the symptoms of autism, how could they ignore this?
Well, they shouldn't. You know, but they do. And the reason that they do is because they'll be they're worried about being offending their donors, right? And what they want is they want to have the widest possible donors and donor base. And I think that's the reason. And it's like, you know, for example, there's a guy, Richard Fry. He's one of the top autism researchers in the world. And he's admitted that, hey, all of us top autism researchers know that vaccines cause autism, but we're just not allowed to talk about it. And so Richard Fry will never publicly talk about that vaccines cause autism, because if he did, his funding would go away. And so it's a matter of self-preservation. He basically has to remain silent, and he can do his work to combat autism. He just isn't allowed to tell the world that vaccines cause autism. But, you know, he makes a decision, and his decision is based on a, you know, sort of a risk benefit. If I tell the world if he says, you know, the reasoning is, if I tell the world that vaccines cause autism, basically I'm kaput as a researcher. I will never get any dollars of funding again, and I can't help my patients. They'll take my license away. They'll take my funding away. They'll destroy me. I will not be able to contribute anymore to figure out what the cure is. And so he basically remains silent for self-preservation reasons. Now, if he and all of his peers were to get together and in unison say, hey, vaccines cause autism. We're the 20 top researchers in the world. Vaccines cause autism. We need to stop this. We need to let people know of the connection. Then that could possibly change everything, or it could result in those 20 researchers essentially being disenfranchised, being kicked out of their jobs, being not being able to help autistic kids anymore. And so it's a risk for them. And so they don't play the risk. And the problem is that we have so many kids today. You know, the CDC says it's 1 in 35. I think it's much higher than that, because I've talked to friends and just polled my friends. I said, hey, do you have an autistic kid in your household? And it's like 1 in 4 of my friends have an autistic kid in their household. And so these numbers are staggering. And the way to stop it is to realize that the whole vaccination program, the whole childhood vaccination program, you're better off as a child not getting any vaccines at all than getting the whole childhood schedule. And there have been papers on this that show that kids who got zero shots, they compare kids that are completely unvaccinated with kids who are fully vaccinated, there's no comparison that the kids who are completely unvaccinated are far healthier than their vaccinated peers. And, you know, there's a clinic in the United States. I'm not going to tell you where, because otherwise they'll be shut down almost instantly. But this clinic has been basically not giving kids vaccines and explaining to parents the risk-benefit of vaccines, and the parents are deciding not to vaccinate their kids. There's not been a single unvaccinated kid in their practice in 25 years, and this is tens of thousands of kids. In 25 years, not a single case of autism when they withhold the vaccines from the kids, and the kids are healthier. And so there are all of these studies in the peer-reviewed literature comparing a completely unvaccinated kids with completely vaccinated kids, and they're all in favor of the unvaccinated kids. Not a single exception. And so they tried to get the NIH to go and do a study to be the definitive study comparing fully unvaccinated kids with fully vaccinated kids, but they couldn't even get the bill out of committee in Congress. They had 9 co-sponsors. It was in 2009. They had 9 co-sponsors, including I think Rand Paul was a co-sponsor of this. They couldn't get it. Was killed in committee. They couldn't even force the NIH to do a study between the completely unvaccinated and the fully vaccinated. So this has been going on for a long time, that they've been able to hide this stuff. They've been able to hide the connection between vaccines and autism. They've been able to hide the connection between vaccines and all of these diseases that kids have, the ADHD, the peanut allergies, the food allergies, any kind of autoimmune diseases. I mean, these things are totally linked with the vaccines, and you'd see it in the data. And of course, the CDC knows this. Like, the CDC had a study. It was done in early 2000. And William Thompson was one of the authors of that study. And he admitted that the CDC basically told him to delete all data that linked vaccines and autism from his study so he can report that there's no link between vaccines and autism. He was ordered to destroy data linking vaccines and autism. And when they tried to get him to testify in Congress that he was ordered by his CDC superiors to destroy this data, Bill Posey, Congressman Bill Posey, was basically told, look, you're not going to have this hearing in Congress. We're not going to let Bill Thompson testify. You're not going to have your hearing. And if you insist on it, we're going to take away all your committee chairmanships. So it's basically They don't want to see any of this stuff happening. They don't want it exposed in Congress. Congress is complicit in this.
It certainly
is. It's horrible.
So let me, I've got two more questions for you. One, before I forget, if people have made it this far into the interview and want to know more about your research, the data you've uncovered, where will they find that?
Sure. It's Steve, it's kirschsubstack.com, K-I-R-S-C-H, Substack. .com, and they can go there. You can also go to my Twitter feed, and then it'll link you to the X, my X profile, St Kirsch, STKIRSCH, on X, and you can also go there as well. And I've written about 1,500 articles on vaccines and COVID mitigations and so forth, and there's a lot of material there for people to go through. And, you know, I've accumulated, somewhere around 1 million followers worldwide on the social media platforms and Substack and so forth.
It's and this leads exactly to my last question, which is it's just an amazing life arc that you've had. You said that not even 3 years ago, you got vaccinated yourself. You were not afraid of vaccines. You were kind of hopeful that they would work. And now you've produced this enormous corpus of research showing just the opposite. What has happened to your life? You, a minute ago, talked about researchers you know who won't go public for fear of having their lives destroyed. You've moved in the opposite direction at high speed. What's happened to your life since you started doing this?
We'd lost probably 95% of the friends who used to associate with with us normally. They won't talk to us anymore. It's basically, we don't want to talk to you. You're
like
an evil person.
Personal friends?
Yeah. Huh. You know, it's the same thing with the scientific advisory board members. They said, I said, look, hey, if I'm wrong, you know, please tell me. Yeah. Please engage with me and tell me where I got it wrong. And they said, no. You're an evil person. We don't want to talk to you. You're wrong, and we don't want to talk to you. You're a bad person. You know, I had a my wife and I were given a National Caring Award because of our work with philanthropies. We're a big philanthropist, and so we received a National Caring Award in Washington D.C. in a big ceremony, and the award was personally presented by Hillary Clinton. In my case, they had Senator Clinton give the award to us in D.C. And I used to have that on my Wikipedia profile. Now, as soon as I came out and I said that the data shows that the vaccines are not safe, my National Caring Award was removed from my Wikipedia profile. You know, and it's just an objective showing how, wow, people are basically trying to position you and to recast you as now this evil person who spreads misinformation when all you're doing is telling the truth. So we lost about 95% of our friends. And, you know, but I look at it and I say, look, you know, I may have lost 100 or 200 friends, but I now have 1 million new friends. And I get stopped at airports saying, hey, are you Steve Kirsch? And can I have a selfie with you? You know, and so I've gone from not being recognized in public to going anywhere in the world and people will stop me and say, hey, can I take a selfie with you? And so it's a pretty dramatic shift. I went from being a top high-tech, I used to be a high-tech executive, respected high-tech executive, and now I can't talk to my high-tech peers. They think I'm nuts. And now you can do a Google search and you search for misinformation super spreader. I'm the top hit. You know, I never expected in my life that I would be the one thing that it would be different about me, that the one unique thing that I would be the best in the world at, that I would be the number one hit at Google on is misinformation super spreader. That is like, you know, at least, but you know, I'm grateful. At least I found my calling. At least I'm good at something. And And it is great to be nationally recognized by Google as the top hit when you type in misinformation super
Amazing.
Spreader. But, you know, all I'm doing is I'm telling the truth.
Yes, I've
noticed. And it is so hard that, you know, it's just like Peter Hotez was offered millions of dollars to have a civil debate with Bobby Kennedy. And Hotez turned it down. Who would turn down $1 million just to have a discussion with someone? Bobby Kennedy's been trying to get a debate on autism for 20 years. For 20 years, he's been trying to get somebody in the medical community to have a debate with. In 20 years, he's not had a single debate with anyone in the medical community on autism. And it's the same thing with Peter Hotez. Everyone who is classed as a misinformation spreader or super spreader, they all want to have a civil debate and a dialogue to say, hey, this is what the data shows. If we got it wrong, please explain it to us. But there is nobody who is prominent on the pro-vaccine narrative side who will agree to debate anyone on our side.
Yes.
So everybody challenging the narrative says, please, let's have a civil discussion. And the people on the other side are saying, no, we will not have a discussion with you. We will not engage with you. Let's duke it out in the medical literature. And that is a cop-out, because we have been duking it out in the medical literature on autism for 20 years. There are more papers showing that vaccines cause autism than there are papers showing vaccines don't cause autism. Now, if we haven't resolved that in 20 years in the medical literature, why do we think it's suddenly going to happen for autism or for the COVID vaccines?
That's right.
It's not going to happen. The only way it's going to happen is with civil dialogue, where we're allowed to say, hey, here's the evidence, explain it. Here's the evidence on our side. Let's have the dialogue. But the dialogue has been turned into censorship. And Bobby Kennedy made a brilliant observation. He says that the history has shown that anyone who uses censorship as a weapon, they're always on the wrong side.
They're committing a crime by definition.
Narrative.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Well, I think I have concluded that you're an amazing person and that you're telling the truth. And I'm grateful that you spent this time with us, and I hope that you will come back. Steve Kirsch.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My pleasure.